There are so many women out there that are taking a stand against gender inequality and are paving the way for the future generation. Ordinary women that are creating a more inclusive and powerful society, free from stereotypes, racism and sexism. And I'm here to share their stories with all of you. Stay tuned, because this is WEN Power, your source of inspiring, powerful and positive stories. And I'm here to discover how we can change the narrative, one story at a time. I am your host, Ilaria Biancacci, journalist and founder of WEN Power. Hello and welcome to a new episode of WEN Power podcast. We are here today with Nasia. She is a nutrition and wellness coach and she's connecting today from Chennai in India. Nasia is not here to talk about specifically about her experience as a nutrition and wellness coach, but she would like to share with you a very personal story that we hope will inspire other women to take the lead of their lives and draw from their own experience and sometimes pain to find a way to help and support other women. So thank you very much, Nasia, for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Ilaria, for inviting me to be there on your podcast.
For me, it's really a pleasure to give you an opportunity to share your story. For the people that are following us, they will discover very soon we're not going to discuss about a very easy topic today. But I would like to get into the story gradually. So it would be nice for you to just talk about yourself and introduce yourself a little bit so that all our audience can get to know you a little bit more. Yes. Before we talk about your story.
Yes, thank you so much. It's actually my pleasure for being a part of WEN Power. And I'm a nutrition and a wellness coach, but before that, by qualification, I am a geneticist. So I did my undergrad in biotech. And then I did my postgrad in human and molecular genetics in the UK. So, and I have lived all of my life outside India. I was brought up in UAE. So I did my entire education in Abu Dhabi and I did my undergrad in Dubai. So being an Indian, coming to India was just once in 2 years vacation just to see my grandparents. So I never had a very deep connect with India because I used to rarely visit India. So, but as I started growing up and I started realizing that, because staying in UAE, we don't have the security that we can settle down here. So at one point we do have to go settle down in India. So that was there always in our head. So it was a constant thing in our mind. So when my father passed away, we had to leave the country and then relocate back to India. So when I did that, I had a major culture shock. I realized a lot of things about families, systems there. We lived a very nice, in a bubble life in UAE all our life with nobody's interference and everybody minds their own business. And, a little bit here and there would be there, but in India, there was a major culture shock that we came to. So, but it was a whole different situation here. We faced discrimination through religion. And so we faced a lot of things here, adjusting here. But still, we also had some really nice people around us that supported our transition from UAE after so many years. It was almost more than 19, 20 years that we lived in UAE and then we had to move back to India. So it was a long journey, a very inspiring journey also, I can say, but that's a story for another day. So that's a little bit about me.
You, in our previous conversation, when we first met, you also mentioned that you study here in the UK. Am I right?
Yes. I did my postgrad there in Sheffield, in University of Sheffield.
And how was your experience living in the UK?
Oh, anybody would ask me that, I would say that the 1 year in UK was the best year of my life. I have never seen such cross-cultural support. And a lot of people told me, though I have a lot of family in UK. I have close, my aunt lives there. She's a consultant gynecologist. But you know, despite them, I used to hear all of these news that women in hijab are not treated well and they are stabbed. So there were so many scary news before I reached UK. But then when I reached UK, I realized the amount of respect I got there as a Muslim woman, and somebody who wore hijab. The amount of respect that I was given by my university, by my professors, by my HOD, the amount of respect for my culture, for my, I was mind blown. I, living in a Muslim country in UAE all my life, I received so much more respect in 1 year than 20 years in UAE. It was like that because I can very easily say that because there in UAE, it is like, you know, the culture is pretty much the same, everybody. And we lived in a more Indianized side of the community. So again, the discrimination used to be there up and down. And there, you know, professional discrimination is quite high in UAE. I think it's there in different parts of the world, but it is quite high in UAE. So, but when I came to UK, I was very pleasantly surprised and I was so happy. And the other thing, coming from a hot country to a colder country, I love the cool climate. So my health, all my health issues disappeared. And I was so, that was the healthiest and the happiest year of my life. And I can't wait to get back there.
That's so, it's really interesting to hear. And especially that you appreciate the cold weather. For me, coming from Sardinia, when I moved to the UK, it was quite a shock, actually. Sometimes I'm still missing the sun and the weather, but I'm adjusting. Although it's been already now 7 years, sometimes I'm still craving for some warmer climate. And it's also happy to know that you felt welcome and it was one of your happiest experience. And You told me you were working as well on a very interesting research and you had the opportunity to progress further, but then something happened on your personal level and you went back to India. Would you like to talk about
that? Yes. So because I had come there for my postgrad, so we were doing this dissertation, so which was on blood cancer. So, and I'm a geneticist, so we were working on chromosome modifications. We were looking for modifications. So my project was very interesting and very, it was different from my life experience as well. So the project became quite a hit because of a discovery that my team had made. So after that, my professor has suggested that, you know, you are a good brain and we want to keep using you and we can take this project further to a great success. So we were in good talking terms and we were thinking of how to develop my career as well in the future. So they were trying to create opportunities for me as well. If not UK, then either in UAE. Why they were considering UAE was because when I was finishing my master's, I got an alliance for marriage. So so in India, we have the system of arranged marriages. So I was called to come see this boy in Abu Dhabi and my family liked the whole profile and I had to decide about that. So before I even finished my master's, there was a lot of to and fro, and then we made a decision of my marriage. So after that, I had to give up certain things in my professional side because we come from a culture where, especially for a girl who doesn't have a father, then the responsibility on the mother increases. So when it came to a choice of moving to Dubai and being there with my husband and giving up a a particular opportunity that could progress my career because my research was successful. So that was a choice that I had to make. But then my university professor was so kind enough. He was like, we can talk about opportunities in UAE as well for you. And I will come down and we can get together and we can think of something for you. And they were really kind with me because they saw some potential in me. And I was really happy and honored to get that support from them. But unfortunately, I did get married that year after 3 months in 2016. But we unfortunately, due to some circumstances, we could not settle down in UAE. So then I had to lose my professional advancement opportunity as well. So that was quite unfortunate. Yes.
I mean, I think it's not easy, culturally speaking, there are still a lot of requirements that you need to meet according to your country, your religion and your culture. And it's sometimes it's really, really sad then to hear stories that women have to give up on their aspirations and personal development. So it's... it's sad to hear this. I know already, because we already talked about your story before. I know that there is a sort of not a happy ending to this, but I know that you came out stronger from all of these experiences. And I know that despite everything else that happened, you came out like very strong with your mind and your ideas. So it's really something remarkable for me.
Thank you so much for saying that, Ilaria. That's actually giving me strength here. I am still in the journey of finding my strength. So it's actually a very beautiful journey. I can say that.
It's not an easy journey as well, but it starts with you starting to share your story as well and to talk about what happened, so that maybe we can at least inspire or motivate other women in your same situation and circumstances to think, okay, you know, she made it and I can make it as well. To take us to the center of this conversation, I want to ask you one question, and it's what is it that you're fighting for today?
I am fighting for freedom of expression. I'm also fighting for normalizing mental health. You know, everybody uses these two words nowadays, mental health. But I think it's only the people who go through it really know what it means. And having that kind of support around us that takes care of how we are feeling while we are going through the absolute lows of mental health. So I'm fighting for both of them, my freedom of expression and normalizing mental health.
And it's I'm with you on this. it's part of my fight as well. I'm not an expert on mental health. I'm trying to inform myself as well, to raise awareness around the topic, because I think it's something that we don't really talk about too much. We still feel uncomfortable on speaking and addressing issue related to mental health. So if we can do something to change the narrative on this, it's already a good start. And once you got married and you went back to India to live with your husband, something else happened, right?
Yeah, yes. So coming to the main point of why we are in this episode today, and I'm again really grateful to you for this opportunity. After I moved back to India, so we were living our normal life and you know, the same circumstances that happened, because of which we could not settle down in UAE, because we were looking for, you know, after marriage, I should settle down somewhere where I'm comfortable with. And India was not a country that I was comfortable because I've never lived there. It's not that I don't know the country, and I had culture shock when I moved in after the death of my father. So I was very specific to my mom that if you're looking for anybody for marriage, it's supposed to be out of India. But, you know, I truly believe in this one saying that man proposes, God disposes. So I believe in God. So I think God had better plans for me. Maybe I had to learn much more in life. So unfortunately, living in India, especially I come from a city called Chennai, but I was living in another city. It's a metropolitan city here, Bangalore. And there is a cultural stereotype of Muslims in Bangalore where people are very different. I think they are very, very different. This is my personal opinion. There is nothing against anybody, but people coming from my city to just a city that is some 6-7 hours away from my city, but the culture differences are very, very, people are not, at least the family that I was in, education inclination, the whole aspect of ambition, the whole aspect of appreciating intelligence was a little on the lower side. I can safely say that. So when I got married and I moved there, and I realized there were a lot of differences, but still for me it was like, I don't have a father, and I like this man. I love this man that I'm married to. So it was just that, the wife feelings inside me was that I have to make this marriage work, and it's okay. We had one hiccup along the way, but we could not settle down in the place we did, and we are going to have a few financial struggles, but it's fine. Life is that. Life is ups and downs. So let's figure out life together. So I embarked on this whole journey as a wife and husband and wife, and it was good initially, and then we had our own challenges, but we were overcoming all of those challenges. But eventually things became a little bit rough, and I was still trying to figure out a lot of things about myself. And then I remembered this advice of my father and advice of my my scholar. Like, there's an Islamic scholar that I do completely whenever I need advice to, I reach out there. So it was like, as Indian women, we are not taught to work on ourselves, to the self-love and the self-development. We are not taught, so that's why it was very easy for me to leave my opportunities and get married. It was very easy, and it didn't even hurt me at that time. And it was just the whole idea of prioritizing. So, and then I remember that, Nasiha, that you are your own person, and only if you are happy, you can give out more happiness. And I didn't realize that I was giving into my marriage with an empty vessel, which was within me. I became empty after a while in the marriage. And I started realizing that I have to work on my own happiness. I have to work on my own development. But I hit a lot of struggles even in that, because that's when I realized that women are not allowed to think about themselves. And people say it superficially, people say it, yes, you are important, you are happy, your happiness means a lot. But I realized deep down that what women want is something that they have to fight for. I don't understand why we live in a situation where we have to fight for our basic, basic human requirements of feeling self-love and feeling self-care and just growing ourselves. And I have lived all my life where I was progressed intellectually, I was progressed spiritually, because I didn't live in India. So my family helped me advance in that way. But we were again, though growing up, we were never taught all of this, but I didn't think I needed it, because my parents were quite cool about it. They were quite advanced about it. So coming back to India, I suddenly came into this regressed society where I came up to a lot of challenges where I was an independent girl, and suddenly a lot of things changed. Like, my life completely became unrecognizable. I could not recognize my life, neither myself. And in all of these struggles of, you know, myself and trying to connect with myself, I didn't realize that I got pregnant. And I got pregnant, and the same day, I had a miscarriage as well. That was the day I knew I got pregnant. So it was a very difficult thing to feel, because in the morning I got the news, and in the by the next evening there was this spotting, and I didn't know what it was, and I thought it was just my delayed, you know, when I got the news of my pregnancy, I thought, okay, no, my periods just got delayed because of my stresses and everything. So I didn't even anticipate pregnancy at that point. But when I did, and the same day it was a miscarriage, so it was a very difficult miscarriage. Why? Because it was traumatic. I didn't have the support of my husband or my in-laws, and though my husband knew about the whole thing, but I didn't have his support as well in it. And I didn't know, as a woman, I always, you know, all of us women, when we get married, we think that we're marrying these Prince Charming, and you know, he's going to be there for us no matter what. And then I realized a lot of things, that even a small struggle or a small road bump in the marriage cannot be overcome, even with big difficulties. And then I was told by a lot of friends and family that, no, your marriage is just different. There are good men out there. There are good families out there. But I had this man, and I love this man. So I was still expecting a lot. That's when I realized that expectation was my enemy here. But unfortunately, being in that situation, expectation is all as women we want at that time. When we are going through the trauma, we forget the struggles, we forget whatever fights we have at that time. All we want is that support that we want, that we need at that time. But I was fortunate enough to have my mom and my aunt with me, and my aunt took me to the hospital, and the whole ordeal of miscarriage, not the surgery, was quite disturbing. I didn't realize all those emotions were so new for me. And there was, you know, and the whole idea of taking those, pills, and for just to expelling the tissue out, it was quite traumatic itself, the whole smell and the pain. And it was, you know, this is a trigger warning for a lot of women who might be listening to this, but I am able to speak about it, so that that is why, you know, that is why I'm here today. I'm able to speak about it because I want women to find the courage within themselves to even speak about the whole incident in a way that they can move towards healing. And that is the goal of me being here on Wimpower today, because I'm bringing a message of healing here and the importance of healing, because I went through all of this emotional and physical trauma at that time. I didn't even give the concentration to what was happening to me mentally. So I went through the whole surgery, and then the doctor told me 3 month bed rest, and I was here all alone without my husband. And then I really, after the whole event, I missed my husband, and there were talks of, you know, not making the marriage work, but my head was not allowing that. My heart was not allowing that. And I said, no matter what, I have to make this marriage work. My husband is important for me. So despite him not talking, I found a way to go back, and I did go back. And I went back, I tried to make the marriage work, but that's when the mental part of the trauma hit me. And that was very, very bad. You know, the physical pain was another thing, but the mental, I didn't realize I had nightmares. I definitely don't want to describe the nightmares here, but I would love to, if anybody wants to talk to me personally, I would love to share it. But I had nightmares, and I used to cry in my sleep. My husband used to tell me that I used to cry in my sleep, and I realized that I used to tremble. I didn't realize. And you know, it is something so hush-hush about it. None of my family members knew it. It was only my in-laws and my mother and my aunt. And because I was going through like the downhill in the marriage. So again, I was not allowed to speak about it. So it was just two friends of mine who I was talking to, but I was not very comfortable because it's supposed to be kept, you know, like, okay, what happened? Something, okay, it's just a miscarriage. You can get pregnant again. And that's when I realized that I started speaking to women out here, and I realized that, especially when it comes to miscarriage, as natural as miscarriage, you know, it's not something that you do to yourself and it's supposed to be silent. And then women are pressured to have a second kid. And I was like, why aren't women allowed to heal? Why aren't they understood? When I went back, none of the family members asked me how I am or what happened with me. And for everybody, it was the fight or whatever it was that was going on in their head. But for me, it was being human. Why didn't anybody think of me as a human being? And I didn't understand that. And I looked for support from my husband, but I didn't. And I used to voice out. I'm somebody who can't keep my feelings inside. I'm somebody who likes expressing my feelings. So I was telling him that I'm depressed. I need help. I need to go to the doctor. I'm in pain. I was in so much of physical pain. I didn't realize why. And on top of that, I had all these cultural questions like, you know, oh, she didn't get pregnant for 3 years. How did she get pregnant suddenly? And they had all of these questions that put a question mark on my character. And that's where my family got hit very badly. I'm like, they know, my family knows me. She's a good person in my heart. And you know, I have given so much into this marriage, but why didn't I have the support? I was questioning, why am I not having the support? Is it wrong to ask the support, or is it wrong to even expect the support? But, you know, I even got to know later on that I was over dramatic with a lot of things. I was not. I never shared my pain to anybody. The only person I shared my pain was my husband, not even my mother. I didn't call my mother and tell her that I'm having sleepless nights, or I'm having nightmares because of this, or I'm in pain because of this. But it was very unfortunate that I looked for support only in my husband. And unfortunately, with the lack of support and the constant pressure, and my husband wanted a kid, and I told him that, let me just heal and then we can properly plan a kid within 6 months. But I don't know, the lack of support really hit me hard. And then I had other things also going on in my marriage. So it was not just the miscarriage, but a lot of things together. There were a lot of factors. And after all of that, I had to leave the house at that point after 5 months of going back. So after the whole surgery and everything, I stayed with my husband for 5 months. And then I came back to my mom just to heal. I realized that I can't heal here because I am pressured here. I am put on stress here. I'm not supported here. I'm not even loved or cared for here. And that really broke me. And I didn't know who to turn to. I didn't have people. The lockdown had started. So it was just my husband and my mother-in-law in the house with me. And it was not a pleasant thing. And I'm somebody who's very, as I said, that I'm good with expressing my emotions. But at the same time, I'm good with expressing emotions with the person that I really want to. But to the world, I can put a great facade on my face. I put a smile. I put strength on my face. I work like nothing is happening. And when I realized that nobody is bothered about me, or nobody even bothered to ask me, it was not something that, you know, you see me not able to walk properly, or you see me in pain and still you don't bother questioning me. I don't think it's in my best interest that I go share something to those people. So I just managed to work those months out there. And then I realized that, no, I need healing, because I came to a point where a lot of my family members don't know this, but I am comfortable telling this. You know, being a Muslim, thinking of suicide is something that is not, it is frowned upon, and we are not allowed to. You know, I'm sure any, you know, if any religion doesn't support this. So, and for me, my religion and my faith is very important. So it was actually my faith, my prayers that were taking me through all of that trauma alone. But I still, one day, it felt like nothing existed for me and I wanted to end my life, and that scared me a lot. And just the fact that I came to that breaking point and I realized that no, this is not something my mom deserves. She's lost my father. This is not something that she deserves. This is not something even my husband deserves. And I started working on myself. I did therapy. Therapy didn't work for me. I didn't like the whole idea of having that limited 1 hour. So therapy didn't work for me. And after that, I thought that, and then I realized that the main reason for why I wanted to heal was because the whole idea of ending my life scared me so much that I came, I repented to God, I prayed for forgiveness. And I was looking for, you know, some place where I could heal. I tried 3 therapists. And I just wanted that pain and those nightmares to go away, that tug in my heart to go away. And I realized that, and I started my work. So I thought my work will distract me. So I started my work full-fledged. I immersed myself in my work. But even that, and then after the point, there came a point where I was stuck in my work and I could not move forward. And I didn't understand why. And then a friend of mine suggested, why don't you go for a support group? I said, I never thought about it. I know the whole concept of support group. It's quite prevalent in UAE or in UK or in US, and I'm quite familiar with it. But I was looking for something in India and I didn't find one. So I approached few people I knew, the doctors I knew, and they gave me a few resources, but there was nothing in this particular manner. There are support groups that for cancer, for some, you know, for some rare disease or for disability. But the whole idea, you know, how in US or in UK, we have support groups for Alcoholic Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous, different, you know. So, but support group is anonymous, you know, where you can, it's a safe space where you can just come and talk, where nobody judges you or people are just there, just listening to you. They might not even talk back to you, but just a place where you can pour out your emotions and feel all the feelings without the judgment and have that good space, a safe space. You know, I wanted to create that for myself. And then I was looking for a faith-based support group and I came across one in US. And I went through the whole support group through Zoom. Or from sitting in India, I went through an online support group. And that support group helped me heal. And they brought this beautiful wave of relief and relaxing feelings inside me. And I, for the first time, I could actually tell my story, because every woman suffers. Every woman suffers. Every woman deserves to heal. Every woman deserves to have that space where they can heal. And, you know, and I realized after I spoke to many people here, I realized that I need to bring this in India. Why doesn't this happen in India? Women in my community, when I was trying to approach, so I decided this is my initiative. I'm going to come up with my own after miscarriage and abortion anonymous support group. And I started talking about it. When I started talking about it and I reached out to my friends and I said, please do let me know if you know. So any woman who's going through either a miscarriage or an abortion after abortion, I would like to know. I would like her to reach out to me. They should know that there is a safe space and this is a support group and it's going to be an anonymous support group. Nobody is going to know and that they are going through this. It's just once a week. So many Muslim women said, I don't have the space or the time of 1 hour a week. And I was like, why? And the question, and when I asked this question through my friends, a lot of people, I got responses like, no, I cannot talk about this around my husband, or I'm in my in-laws' house, I cannot talk about it. My you know, let me go back to my parents, but this is an 8-week thing. I cannot even talk about it, though this is a good thing. I want this, but I cannot be a part of it. Women are scared and they need more healing just to, you know, just to come out of the pressure that they are pressurized into having a second kid. Why aren't these women given the space to heal? I don't understand that. And I was so heartbroken that there is a big community, my own community, that I can't help, but it's fine. Let me help any woman who wants. You know, I initially started this with the ideology of my community, because I know my community doesn't have, they are not liberated. They don't have much rights. They are women There are so many women out there. They do. There is a good percentage of women who have rights, who have great family support and everything. But, you know, those women talk about the good parts of life. But then there are so many women who go through so many restrictions and they are punished. There is subordination in relationships. I don't understand where there is subordination in a relationship that's supposed to be nurtured. I actually talk about, I would just like to bring a religious element here, which people don't talk about. Our Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in his last sermon before his death, he gave out a rule that men should do things to soften their wives' hearts, to soften their women's heart. Nobody talks about it. Everybody talks about how women are supposed to be obedient to their husbands and do things for their husbands and everything. But nobody talks about what a husband is supposed to do for their women or what their men are supposed to do for their women. And what are these men doing to soften their hearts? What are these? And we women have so many rights in Islam. And even the rights given by God are not given to us in our country. And that hurts me. This is my own personal pain. It hurts me a lot. And I was trying to find women. I'm struggling to find these women because there are a lot of women out here, but they are just scared to come out. And I'm telling them it's anonymous. Nobody needs to know. Nobody will know you're going through this. You can come be a part of the group, talk, share your story, heal yourself. We will talk about all emotions and you, it is a safe space. But even though they do understand the whole concept of it now, I had to educate few women about what the concept of support group is. And that surprised me. And then I realized that I'm doing something very big. And a few of my friends on Clubhouse, so that is where I started promoting this initiative of mine. And a few of my friends said that you're a Muslim and you're talking about after abortion and miscarriage. But even though you're talking about after abortion, just because you're using the word abortion, you are going to get a lot of hate. Thank God that you are from South India and your house will not be burned down because you're from South India. And that scared me. I didn't realize that I was bringing something so horrible. Where is it horrible? It's a woman who's going through trauma. And I just want the woman to heal. It is as simple as that. And I didn't realize I was bringing, I didn't realize. And then my friends and my connections on Clubhouse told me that, no, what you're bringing is huge. And you know, women don't talk about this. Doctors don't talk about this. Doctors, you know, once a woman goes through a miscarriage, then the in-laws come like, you know, no, she needs to get pregnant again. That's how they tell the woman to heal. Don't worry, you will have another kid soon. The woman just wants to heal. And yes, obviously, every woman wants to be a mother again. She has her own fears of being a mother again. I have that fear. But that's not understood. And that really broke me. But thankfully, I know it's going to be a struggle, but I'm a person who thinks, you know, who takes things with a stride and you know, I like pushing my limitations. I like pushing through my challenges. So I am being very hopeful that this is going to be taken with much more love. There is a portion on Clubhouse that has given me so much of love and appreciation for this. And few women did come forward. There was this lady who came forward and said, I want to heal after 25 years of going through this trauma. And I didn't realize what a powerful thing I'm doing. I didn't, honestly, till, you know, I'm sure Hermione connected me to you and till Hermione said that you're doing something great, Naseha. And I didn't realize. I thought I was just helping women heal whatever I was going through. And for me, this is also a healing process to give that support to other women. If I could even help one woman around me heal, one mother around me heal. There are mothers who have kids and then go through miscarriages or who take decisions of abortion, whatever it is. But they all deserve healing. How is it that something as simple as this is taboo or as simple as this is not understood? I don't understand this. I wish I find answers someday, but yes, this is how my story has been and my journey has been. I would like to, I know it's been quite long about this, but thank you so much for listening to this, Ilaria.
Nasia, thank you very much for sharing this. I know that it's not easy what you went through. And I'm sure that between all the women, even men that are listening to us, some of them, they might share the same experience, either their sister, daughter's wife. It's a very common experience, but it's still a challenge that we have to face. Like, we are not supposed to talk about it. Why? Like you said, I'm not saying that it should be discussed in a bar or in a cafe with anyone, but you should be able as a woman to talk about it within your family, within your friends, without feeling judged, without feeling somehow like you talking about something that shouldn't be said, because it's part of the, when it comes to miscarriage, it's part of the nature. Is a decision that comes not from yourself. When it's abortion, again, it's not an easy decision for the woman to take, and there is a lot of healing to do after. And we need to talk more about this, because it's part of the life of a woman everywhere in the world. So we need to raise more awareness. And I'm actually very happy to have given you the opportunity to share what you're doing as well. And I'm happy and glad that Clubhouse, which maybe some people might think is just another social media network, it's actually helping you to spread awareness around this taboo in your country, and to give also the opportunity to women to maybe connect on a very anonymous way and get people on board from different countries sharing different experience. I think it's really, really important. So thank you once more for taking the time to share with us.
No, thank you so much, Ilaria, because I truly believe that as women, when we are born, you know, when we are born as girls and then we are brought up, somewhere down our heart, no matter who we are or how we are or what education we have, we all have that mother instinct inside us. All of us want to be these great mothers at some point in our life. And so we live with that fact that one day I will have my own kid. And it's a beautiful feeling. And when we go through a trauma with that same emotion, we deserve healing. And that is what my message is today, that, you know, my initiative is also that we all deserve healing so that we can eventually, you know, and there's so many women out there who go through a miscarriage and then realize that they can't be mothers. So all there's so many different stories, different women. And I want to address the fact that, yes, even men go through trauma when their wives or their daughters or their sisters are suffering. And even men go through trauma, and some men are so kind enough and so compassionate enough to realize that they are going through physical pain. We are just going through emotional pain. So let us give them more support. But then they hide their pain as well. So on Clubhouse, I'm telling you, Clubhouse is not just another social media. It's the most powerful platform I have come across where people are spreading awareness about mental health. I'm a part of a group right now, a club life right now called as the Mind Hub, where we are bringing out mental awareness. I run my own club called Breathe Fit and Free. And we are all bringing out mental awareness, mental health awareness, and on different aspects, and talk about it and let people know that this is safe. And another point I wanted to put out there, mental health in, I don't know about at least my community or my family, and their family is like mine everywhere around me. So I can speak from my own personal experience. We are not allowed to talk about mental health. We are not. It is not accepted. People think we are crazy. How can you talk about things like, you know, you should just get over it. You should just get over it. That's because the previous generation was taught like that, and we are brought up like that. I have cousins of mine telling that, Didi, in our family, nobody can talk about mental health. So I want to break all of that. Mental health is a big thing. And I say any part of wellness, I'm a nutrition and a wellness coach, any part of wellness, any part of wellness starts with mental health. Only if you're mentally fit, you can be physically fit or emotionally fit or whatever it is, spiritually fit, but it starts with mental health. And that's the whole reason I do my work, even my nutrition work, because after this whole miscarriage, I ended up having this binge eating problem. And I went through a whole, being a nutritionist, I had gone through struggles with that. So overcoming different struggles, how your mental health affects and how it has these domino effect in your body and around you, it is alarming. And I want people to know about it. I want people to understand it. And I want families to be there for supporting your own families and friends to be there. And thank you so much for giving me this platform where I could share this message with so much of passion, with all the pain that I have and all the passion that I have. Thank you so much for this, Ilaria. This means a lot to me.
Natsia, you are more than welcome. And as you said before as well, that you wish at least, you know, to help, even if it's just one woman. I hope that at least within all our audience today, that we managed to inspire at least one person to maybe take a step towards raising awareness about miscarriage, mental health, healing, anything that can help you as a woman. And if you are a man listening to the Women Power podcast, to help all the women around you that maybe are facing this situation now, you know that there is a way to help and support them. And if we want to change the narrative around this, we need to do it together. So if the women are suffering, the men are suffering too, but we should like support each other always. And on this note, I at the beginning of the podcast, I ask you, what is that you're fighting for? And I would like to ask you, what is that you wish to stop fighting for?
I would like to say the same thing, Ilaria. I would like to wish to stop fighting for my freedom of expression. And not just mine, all the women deserve this freedom of expression, and they should. Every woman is fighting from her own four walls. She's hiding. She is scared. She is living in fear. I want these women to stop living in fear and fight and stop fighting for their freedom of expression. And I want to stop fighting for normalizing mental health. I really do want to stop fighting for that. And it's looking at how the world is going right now. There is a 50-50 kind of a population we live in, but I'm hoping it becomes 100% where, you know, we don't fight for something as natural and as beautiful as our own human mind. And our own human mind is a maze. And, you know, nobody can understand it, but at least you can hold your hands around, at least you can hold your family's hands and help you heal, you know. So I would want to stop fighting for that.
That's as I say at the beginning, that's a really important fight. But at the same time, I share your same feeling that would be nice to stop fighting for this. It means that then if we can finally say that we achieved the result, then it means that we made a change and something really, really meaningful happened. And one last question is, if there is any advice that you would like to share with all the women and all the men that are listening to us today, what would that be?
I would like to say that there's this quote. It's a quote of my own, actually. There are so many inspiring quotes that help me heal and go through a lot of things. But this is very close to my heart. That's why I would like to put this out. I always tell people that, you know, listen through your heart, not through your ears. If somebody is coming and talking to you, and if somebody is telling you their pain, listen through your heart.
Thank you, Natsia, for this. And thank you again for being with us today and sharing your story and bringing some light and some knowledge and sharing your knowledge around this healing process, women bodies, miscarriage, mental health, and everything else that we discussed today. Thank you. Thank you again for sharing your story with us.
Thank you so much, Ilaria. I'm so honored to be a part of Wimpower and, you know, do a little bit of my, share a little piece of myself for all the women out there in the whole world. And I hope every woman who's listening out there, or every man who's listening out there, no matter who you are, you all deserve healing. And you do know that for women going through this trauma, I would like women to know that they have my space and they can definitely connect with me, and they have a space, safe space with me. Thank you so much, Ilaria.
You're welcome. Just on a very last note, if they would like to connect with you, would you like to share your, I don't know, either your Clubhouse channel yes. or social media channel?
Yes, definitely. It's my Instagram. Anybody can DM me on my Instagram. My Instagram is at Nasiha, N-A-A-S-I-H-A, Sheikh, S-H-E-I-K-H, Nasiha Sheikh. That is my Instagram handle. And I think, Ilaria, you can even put it as a link description in the description.
You can, yes.
Yeah. So people can easily connect with me. You can DM me anytime and we can find out another comfortable way to connect, whichever is convenient with any of you.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for this. Thank you again.
If this was your first time listening to When Power Podcast, thank you for taking the time. You can find us on Podbean and Spotify. Subscribe to our newsletter on wempower.co and keep up to date with all the future projects on all our social media at WempowerUK. Thank you to all the women out there that are following and supporting Wempower. I will continue to bring to you powerful, inspiring and positive stories from all over the world. Don't forget, together we empower women. This is Ilaria for Wempower Podcast. Until next time.